Good morning. Sorry for the little bit of late start here. Some of us get lost between Pismo and San Luis Obispo. It's GPS is not as reliable for California Coastal Commissioners. So welcome to a Friday at the California Coastal Commission. It's actually a very lovely day, even though it's Friday the 13th. I've decided that 13 is a very good number for us. First, I want to thank the Visitors and Convention Bureau for the lovely reception last night. We really had a great time. It was a beautiful venue, met a lot of really terrific people. And again, thank Commissioner Howell for having been such a nice host this whole week in one of the more beautiful places of the world. So thank you very much. So we will start with the roll call.
Commissioner Gibson.
Here.
Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Commissioner Howell.
Here.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner Lucchesi.
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger. Commissioner Turnbull Sanders.
Here.
Chair Butchka.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Okay. So do we have any agenda changes today?
Yes. Good morning, Chair Butchka and commissioners, and to the general public in attendance today. Please note that if you do wish to speak to the commission on any item today, that you need to fill out a speaker slip and turn that into a staff member. You can find the speaker slips, today's agenda, and staff to help you out at the staff table next to the entry to this room. We also request that you silence or turn off your cell phone when you're in the hearing room so that you don't disturb the meeting. As far as changes to the agenda, let me go through those now. Item 9A, application 916-384, the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, that's moved to consent. Item 9B, application 916-0990, Venico Incorporated, is postponed. Item 12A, the Dollar General application, that's postponed. Item 18A, the MARJA LCP amendment, is postponed. Item 20A, that's application 616-0099 for the San Elijo Joint Power Authority, that's moved to consent. Item 20B, is application 616-0434 for state parks, that's moved to consent. And item 20C, 616-0528 is moved to consent. And that concludes the agenda changes.
Madam Chair, I have just one quick announcement I want to make. As many of you heard yesterday, President Obama added six areas to the California Coastal National Monument, which totaling 6,230 acres, which is a huge accomplishment, a huge deal. The areas include the 5,800 Cotoni Coast Dairies parcel that extends from the slopes of the Santa Cruz Mountains to the terraces overlooking the Pacific Ocean. And that area includes some Native American archaeological sites, wetlands, coastal prairie, grasslands, and stands of coast redwoods. And in Humboldt County, three areas were added: Trinidad Head, the Waloof Lighthouse Ranch, and I'm not sure if I pronounced that right, but and the and about 400 acres of the Lost Coast headland south of Eureka, which is just a really spectacular area of coast. Also added was Piedras Blancas in San Luis Obispo County and a group of offshore pinnacles and rocks and little small islands off of Orange County, which are used by seals and seabirds and the such. And these sites are currently managed by the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, BLM, and the monument designation adds this additional layer of protections of those areas, closing them off to new development, such as gas and oil drilling. So just a great way to end President Obama's administration. So I turn it back over to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. So we're going to start our, we did agenda changes, so start our general public comment. I have some speaker slips here. We generally try to keep it to 30 minutes, but it looks to me like I can certainly get through everyone. this morning. So I'll start with David Tyra. And if you'll state your name for the record, everyone gets 3 minutes apiece.
Good morning. My name is David Tyra, and I'm president of Morro Coast Audubon Society. And I'm here to speak in behalf of Sea and Sage Audubon Society of Orange County. Sea and Sage Audubon Society in Orange County has been engaged in protecting birds, especially sensitive species, on the Southern California beaches for almost 60 years. Our mission is to protect birds, other wildlife, and their habitats through education, citizen science, research, and public policy advocacy. As far back as 1964, Sea and Sage helped to establish one of the first protected California least tern colonies, which in 1973 became the first officially recognized breeding tern colonies under the Endangered Species Act. We continue to this day to contribute volunteers, funding, and support at the Huntington Beach Least Tern Natural Preserve, Bolsa Chica Reserves, Newport Bay, and Anaheim Bay Least Tern Colonies. We conduct quarterly Western Snowy Plover surveys and semi-annual Brown Pelican surveys, both in coordination with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. We conduct outreach and education programs about protecting birds, beaches, and the ocean. Recently, an increase in threats at least terns and snowy plovers along Southern California beaches has forced us to become more involved with advocacy and conservation efforts. One major threat that arose this year is the Orange County proposal to create a dog beach directly adjacent to the Huntington Beach Least Tern Natural Preserve, and unauthorized and unpermitted construction of walkways at snowy plover winter roost sites, the use of falconry to chase away birds on beaches that are also snowy plover winter roost sites. While we fully understand and support a balance between wildlife protections, environmentally sensitive habitat areas, human health, and access and recreation, these new projects go beyond the scope of reasonable compromise. As we seek to address these issues through our volunteer programs, we want to take this opportunity to thank you and your staff for your work to uphold and administer the Coastal Act. We would also like to formally thank you and staff for your input to the County of Orange proposed ordinance change and negative declaration, which proposes to allow a dog beach at the mouth of the Santa Ana River. Thank you, the members of Sea and Sage and Morro Coast Audubon Societies. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mark Krause.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I'm Mark Krause on behalf of Pacific Gas and Electric Company, here to share with you an update on our progress we're making toward the eventual retirement of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant here in San Luis Obispo County. As I reported to you in July, PG&E and six other parties, including NRDC, Friends of the Earth, and IBEW Local 1245, signed on to a joint proposal that would increase investment in energy efficiency, renewables, and storage while phasing out PG&E's production of nuclear power in 2024 and 2025 at the end of our original operating licenses. Given our expectation that about one half of our retail load will be served by other sources such as rooftop solar and community choice aggregation, PG&E determined that there was not a need for the full output of Diablo Canyon after the expiration of its licenses in 2025. The joint proposal includes a PG&E commitment to replace Diablo Canyon's energy as needed for bundled customers with greenhouse gas free supply and energy efficiency, and to achieve 55% renewable energy by 2031. Many of these commitments in the agreement are contingent upon approval by the California Public Utilities Commission. Following the June announcement, PG&E held public workshops here in San Luis Obispo County and in San Francisco Bay Area to gather input regarding the proposal and filed the joint proposal on August 11th. Subsequent meetings with affected local governments resulted in a proposed $85 million community benefits package. That's $75 million to aid local governments with declining property revenues as a result of the last 9 years, basically, of the plant's production, and $10 million for economic development in the San Luis Obispo area. The joint proposal also includes $520 million for employee retention and training packages and a commitment by PG&E to continue funding for emergency preparedness and planning. We expect parties' responses to the community benefits package and intervener testimony on January 27th. Other significant issues that will have to be addressed by the PUC to implement the proposal include electric procurement and cost allocation. We've asked the PUC to issue a decision in the proceeding by the end of this year. Finally, PG&E has started the planning process for the decommissioning of Diablo Canyon and will begin discussions with Coastal Commission staff and other agencies and stakeholders regarding the future use of the 13,000-acre site when all decommissioning activities are completed. PG&E has committed to take no action on the Diablo Canyon lands until this stakeholder process is completed and the company has submitted a site-specific decommissioning plan to the PUC, which is expected in about 2 years. So that's my update, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Marty Brown.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Marty Brown. I live in Atascadero. I'm here today to thank you for your letter of support to NOAA for the designation of the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary. Your mission is to protect California's coast and ocean for present and future generations. We have a tremendous opportunity here to do just that. I don't know if Congresswoman Lois Capps responded to your letter requesting her to urge President Obama to act on this important matter. But with the change in Washington, time is of the essence to protect our precious coast, seashore, and ocean. President Obama, in his farewell address to the American people, advised us to stand up, dive in, and stay with it. It is imperative that we do that now. Please stay with the sanctuary designation until it becomes a reality. I urge you commissioners to do what you can to influence the process, to make this great gift to the people of this county, Santa Barbara County, and people around the world for the present and future generations. Thank you again.
Thank you. Jeff Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jeff Edwards. The community of Oceano and those impacted adversely by the ODSVRA have waited 35 years and now must wait longer based on yesterday's decision or lack thereof. DPR is out of compliance now and has been for decades. This commission would not allow a private sector applicant to remain out of compliance for so long. Never, ever would happen. I wondered why there were so few OHV enthusiasts and supporters at the meeting yesterday. Now I know why. They got the email blast. Don't worry. Nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. Don't bother. That's what happened. Between now and September, a triumvirate of folks are going to work together to resolve park issues. You have DPR as one of them. They're masters of obfuscation and delay. Masters. They've been doing it for decades. You have the Natural Resources Agency as one of those negotiators. Madam Chair, you may remember the February 2015 meeting where then Undersecretary Beeland extolled the virtues of low-cost camping and was the biggest cheerleader you could imagine for the OHV folks. Is Mr. Gibson going to take a different position? And lastly, you have an interim director that is going to be at that table as well, and he may or may not be your permanent director. We don't know. In the next 8 months, a number of things are going to happen that affect this big picture analysis. One of them is the pending DPR five-year dust plan and associated CDP. This is just like the last 5 years of dust mitigation, which has been utterly a complete failure. DPR will continue to spend $1 to $1.5 million every year on these hay bales and silt fencing as a cost of doing business. They don't care. If you want meaningful progress, set this negotiation up for success. Approach the issue as adversaries so you can have solid negotiations. Yesterday I mentioned secure independent legal counsel The land law section of the AG's office can't represent you and DPR, can they? So, you know, ironically, if DPR and the ODSVRA want to be in business for the next 50 years, they need to make changes. Yet they're going to go kicking and screaming about any change that's proposed. So, you know, I would just close by saying there are vested interests, including local cities, Pismo Beach and Grover Beach. They realize most of the economic benefits from this operation, yet they realize none of the impacts, or very few.
So thank you.
You've got local vested interests who want to maintain the status quo as well. And so,
sir, your time is up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just say, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, we all know what that means. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Steve Ray is our last speaker. He has donated time by Jennifer Savage, so you can have up to 6 minutes.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I'm Steve Ray of the Banning Ranch Conservancy. It's good to be with you this morning. I was looking forward to maybe having a break this month, but things are happening here, so I'm with you again today yet. Wanted to give you a kind of the latest update in what seems to be the never-ending story of Banning Ranch. As you are well aware, in September, the commission denied the project proposed at Banning Ranch, and the applicants have filed litigation against the commission regarding that. Well, I want to make you aware that's not the only litigation regarding Banning Ranch. In July 2012, the City of Newport Beach approved the Banning Ranch project, a much larger project than the one that this commission denied. The Banning Ranch Conservancy litigated that case, and amazingly, because in Orange County the environment never seems to win a case, but amazingly in trial court, the Conservancy prevailed. We were very happy with that, but of course the city and the developers weren't, and those parties then filed an appeal to the Orange County Appellate Court, and in the Appellate Court, the city and the developers prevailed. Orange County Appellate Court has a nickname down there. It's known as the place where the environment goes to die, and it did in that case. The Conservancy then petitioned the Supreme Court for review of the case. We were granted the review by the Supreme Court. And the oral arguments, so we filed all the briefs, the oral arguments were heard last week, Wednesday, at the California Supreme Court. The decision will be out 90 days from then or sooner. So the deadline will be about April 4th that the commission or that the court will be rendering a decision. We're cautiously optimistic. In that case, we have alleged that the city has violated their own general plan, that they violated CEQA, and that they also violated the Coastal Act. So there were many issues relative to the case, and the court justices asked a lot of very penetrating questions. The level of their expertise and knowledge of the case was surprising and heartening at the same time. So we are awaiting the decision for that, and we'll make you aware as soon as we know. But the developers, after the denial by this body of their project, have the ability to come back with a new application, and our understanding is that is the plan. Of course, under the provisions, they would be able to come back in late March. I would think it would not be wise for them to come in and file an application when maybe in the next 2 weeks the court may be deciding against them, and they would have to go all the way back to the city. The relief we have sought from the Supreme Court is that they vacate the city's all city approvals of the project, and if that's the case, then the developers would have to go all the way back and start again with the city, which would make any application before this commission moot, in my opinion, since there would be no local approval and nothing to base any application on. So we will find out what they're going to do. Like I said, I think it would be wise for them to wait until after the Supreme Court decision comes down. They may move forward with it anyway, just because I think they think they may win too at the Supreme Court. and may want to speed it up. So those things are kind of in the brew right now, and we will keep you aware as things develop. If you have any questions about any of this, be happy to answer them. But otherwise, thank you very much.
All right, that takes us to agenda item number 5, which is the administrative calendar for the South Coast District, Orange County. There's one item, routine dock replacement. The conditions are acceptable to the applicant. There's no known public interest, and staff recommends concurrence with the executive director and approval of the administrative calendar.
The light is on.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Do I have any objection to unanimous concurrence of the administrative calendar? Seeing none, we concur.
Thank you. That takes us to item 6, which is the consent calendar for the South Coast District, Orange County. There are 4 applications, 3 for waterfront homes in Newport Beach and 1 for a remodel addition to a home along a canyon in San Clemente. Staff is not aware of any public interest in 3 of those 4 applications. However, on item 6D, the Shaw application for residents at 1200 Oceanfront in Newport Beach, staff did receive 2 comment letters on the proposal, which are in your addendum, along with the staff response. The comment letters identified concerns about the lot zoning and whether the description of an existing block wall at the site is accurate. Staff's response corrects the zoning in the staff report, which doesn't alter the project or the staff recommendation, and provides further evidence to support the staff's description of the existing block wall, which would be removed as part of the project. Another concern raised is that there's insufficient front and side yard setbacks proposed for the new residents. As proposed, the project does adhere to the City of Newport Beach development standards regarding an 8-foot front yard setback and 3-foot side yard setback. So the project meets all city requirements, including height and density, and is in character with the development on West Oceanfront in on the Balboa Peninsula in Newport Beach. And finally, the letters raise concerns that soil conditions may have changed, and the applicant's geologist addressed that as well, saying that soil conditions remain as they had documented them. So staff recommends the Shaw application remain on the consent calendar. The conditions are acceptable to the applicant. Staff recommends the commission approve the consent calendar items for the South Coast District.
Thank you. Do I have a...
I'll move consent.
Thank you.
For South Coast.
Do I have any objection to unanimous yes or for approval? So it is approved. Thank you. Consent calendar approved.
So good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. So that takes us to the energy and federal consistency portion of today's agenda. And we can go directly to item 7A. This is a request by Poseidon Resources to waive the application fee for its upcoming resubmittal of a permit application for a seawater desalination facility in Huntington Beach. The Commission's regulations allow the Executive Director to waive an application fee when requested by resolution of the Commission. We strongly recommend you deny Poseidon's request for a fee waiver. Staff provided you with a January 6th letter from Poseidon. In it, Poseidon raises 6 issues as to why it believes the Commission should approve a fee waiver. I'll address each of these issues. And I do ask that you bear with me here. There are a lot of dates in a timeline that is very important, albeit a bit tedious. So as you know, there's a lot of history here, including a November 2013 Coastal Commission hearing on an earlier proposal by Poseidon to build a desal plant in Huntington Beach. That hearing ended with Poseidon withdrawing its permit application. Poseidon claims in the letter that it withdrew the application at the request of the Coastal Commission. That didn't match our memory of the hearing, and so we reviewed the video, and we confirmed our recollection that the commission itself did not request that Poseidon withdrew that application. During the hearing deliberations, commissioners identified several shortcomings in Poseidon's application and discussed various options to handle those shortcomings, including the desire for more information regarding project alternatives, specifically the potential feasibility of using an alternative to an open ocean intake for its source water. These options included having staff or Poseidon conduct additional studies, potentially conducting an independent review of project components, continuing the hearing to allow these studies to be done, and considering whether the additional information could be addressed through special conditions. During the commission's discussion of these options, Poseidon approached the mic and stated it would be willing to withdraw its application, which would provide the time needed for Poseidon and staff to develop additional information about the project. The commission itself did not ask Poseidon to withdraw. And if you recall, Poseidon then proceeded to work with staff and establish an independent scientific and technical advisory panel that would evaluate the feasibility of Poseidon using a subsurface intake for its source water. Poseidon states in its fee waiver request that it resubmitted an application when it did in 2015 because commission staff expressed a preference for the Coastal Commission to act before the Regional Water Quality Control Board considered Poseidon's renewal of its NPDES permit for the proposed project. Now, prior to the State Board's adoption of the new DESAL amendment, commission staff general recommendation had been that applicants coordinate with the involved agencies to determine the best permit sequence. And this did most often result in a recommendation that applicants obtain a coastal permit before they obtain the necessary board approvals. However, adoption of the DESAL amendment significantly changed the permitting landscape, establishing that the regional board now has primary authority to determine whether a proposed project represents the best available site, design, technology, and mitigation measures feasible. With that change, commission staff then recommended that Poseidon obtain its regional board approval before going to the Coastal Commission. Staff did not recommend Poseidon resubmit an application when it did in September 2015 for a number of reasons. In September 2015, the expert panel was completing phase two of its work. There was a potential phase three. Phase three would have expanded the investigation of the feasibility of subsurface intakes, looking up and down coast of Poseidon's preferred site. The previous May, the State Board had adopted the new DESAL amendment, and although it was still draft, based on its contents, we believed that the board would also want the kind of information that would have been generated in a phase three report. Staff expressed our desire for Poseidon to fund phase three. We recommended Poseidon not submit a new permit application until the phase three work was complete and after the regional board made its determination as to whether Poseidon's proposed project conformed to the requirements of the newly adopted DESAL amendment. Poseidon declined to fund phase three and instead submitted its application in September 2015. So because at that time the DESAL amendment was draft only, not the law, staff could not require evidence of conformance with the DESAL amendment as a permit filing requirement. We did deem the application incomplete for other reasons. In January 2016, the Office of Administrative Law approved the new DESAL amendment, and the Poseidon project became subject to its requirements. So then in March 2016, Poseidon was ready to submit information to commission staff that it believed would result in a complete application. And a complete application, if you recall, starts the six-month Permit Streamlining Act clock. However, we believe the regional board should conduct their review first for a number of reasons, including the fact that the board's review could result in a very different project. And given the specific new requirements contained in the desal amendment, we anticipated that the board would require of Poseidon the same subsurface intake site investigation we required Poseidon to fund in the expert panel's phase three review. So we were concerned that Poseidon may be in a position to withdraw their permit application again. And so last March, we offered Poseidon an option to avoid another permit withdrawal. I personally called Poseidon and suggested they may want to consider keeping their pending application incomplete while the regional board process proceeds first. Poseidon declined to follow this recommendation, and the six-month permit streamlining at clock began on April 1, 2016. And so this meant that the Coastal Commission hearing would need to occur no later than September 2016. As we got closer to that September meeting and our formal consultation process with the board staff was underway, we learned that the board was in fact preparing to require significant amounts of additional information from Poseidon that could potentially result in project changes. And during this time, Poseidon also proposed some offshore project changes that resulted in the State Lands Commission needing to conduct additional analysis under CEQA. Given all of this, it reinforced our concern about proceeding with a Coastal Commission hearing until after the State Lands Commission completed the additional CEQA review and the regional board completed its evaluation under the new DCEL amendment. Last summer, at about month four of the six-month Permit Streamlining Act clock, I briefed the commission on this situation, if you recall, and several commissioners recommended to Poseidon that it withdraw its application to avoid forcing the commission to hold a hearing on a project potentially subject to substantial changes. It took a while for Poseidon to withdraw the application, and so we had to proceed in anticipation of a hearing, and we nearly completed a written staff recommendation. Poseidon also believes that the upcoming staff review should not require a substantial amount of additional staff time. We strongly disagree. This project is about to undergo one and maybe even two more CEQA reviews and is going through the regional board review, and any of these reviews could result in changes to the project. Further, staff is participating in all of these reviews, which include numerous meetings, document reviews, coordination, etc. This is an extremely complex project, as you know, and with a lot of moving parts, frankly, and it continues to take a significant amount of staff time. Tom Luster, the commission's key staff person for this project, has calculated that he spends 20 to 70% of his time each week on Poseidon. So a couple more comments before I close. Poseidon states his request is similar to the commission's granting of a fee waiver for the Newport Banning Ranch project, and therefore the same logic applies here. You know, we just disagree. There are factual differences in the history of the NBR project in this one, and we just don't support a fee waiver here. Finally, Poseidon states that it has already paid over $300,000 in permit fees. Poseidon has applied for and withdrawn two separate applications for two different versions of its proposed project. Commission staff has prepared two complete staff reports, and the commission has held one 10-hour hearing. In addition, outside of the permit application review process and without benefit of an application fee, staff has reviewed several thousand pages of environmental reports, technical documents, and public comments as part of local government and state agency reviews, has participated in a very time-consuming expert panel review process, and has met with Poseidon to review project components and draft reports prior to Poseidon's formal submittals. And as we point out in our staff report, Poseidon has identified no financial hardship as a reason for its requested fee waiver. The commission's permit fees represent a very small percentage of Poseidon's $900 million-plus project costs. And with that, I will close, and I recommend the commission deny the fee waiver request.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, here you go. Okay, turn red for some reason. Okay. All right. I have several speaker cards here. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to blame this one on Billy.
Why not?
Do I have any ex partes on this matter? Commissioner McClure?
Yes, I met briefly with
There it is.
Okay, thank you. I met briefly with Susan McCabe yesterday and talked about the desire for the fee waiver. We didn't go into really any detail other than it was based around that it's just been such a long time in process of working towards getting a application in front of us. Thank you. And that was yesterday verbally at the restaurant next door.
Everything. Oh, there we go. Commissioner Vargas.
Thank you. Yeah, I had a phone call with Susan McCabe 1 week ago today where this was not the main issue that we discussed, but this was a issue that was discussed for, you know, 30 or 40 seconds, and she gave me her view, or at least Poseidon's view, her applicant, the applicant's view, that they had, you know, this was a kind of a formality, and they had basically, their point of view was they had withdrawn at the request of staff, and they were resubmitting, and therefore they wanted to waive the fee.
Thank you. All right. Now we'll turn to the applicant, Susan Horry. And I was told you'd like 5 minutes.
That's correct. And also, we have a speaker card from Stan Williams of Poseidon also that you should have. And Stan will be following me.
All right, will he be included in the 5 minutes?
No.
All right, I also have Scott Maloney.
And he will cede time to me.
He's ceding time. So you're going to have 5 minutes, and then
Mr. Williams will have 3 minutes after me.
3 minutes. Okay.
I don't think I'll need all 5 minutes, and I don't think Stan needs all 3 minutes, but we would both like to speak.
That's fine.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Bochco and members of the Commission. I'd like to begin by reviewing the circumstances supporting our request for a fee waiver. I know that Allison has provided a chronology, but I think that there are some other important factors that we would like the Commission to consider. As we mentioned, Poseidon first submitted its CDP application in 2006, and over the last 10 years has been working with staff on the review of this desalination project and trying to bring this project to California. In November 2013, at the end of the commission hearing on Poseidon's CDP application and the appeal of the locally issued CDP, Poseidon withdrew its application to allow for Poseidon and the commission staff to jointly facilitate an independent third-party review of the feasibility of the subsurface intake technology that Commission staff was recommending for approval. Because this couldn't be done before expiration of the Permit Streamlining Act, the application was withdrawn in order to provide the time for both staff and Poseidon to convene this independent panel. Over the next 18 months, Poseidon worked cooperatively on the ISTAP process to study the feasibility of subsurface intake at Huntington Beach site at a cost to Poseidon of approximately $2.3 million. This was known as the ISTAP process, and we submitted a summary of that work with our January 6th letter. After the ISTAP process concluded, Poseidon met with commission staff to seek concurrence on the resubmittal of its application, which was filed in September of 2015, and the application fee was paid at that time. Prior to its submittal, Commission staff had stated in an April 2015 letter that it preferred that it take the first action on the CDP before the Regional Board took action to amend or renew the project's NPDES permit. The CDP application was deemed complete in April 2016, as you have heard. The DSAL amendment was adopted in May 2015, so almost a year before, and took effect in January of 2016. And I realize, as Allison said, there are a lot of dates here for everybody to sort through. And so the DSAL amendment took effect several months before the CDP was deemed complete, but it had been out since May of the prior year. And in fact, the Commission's letter deeming the application complete acknowledged that formal consultation with the state and regional board would continue, but never stated or implied that the ongoing consultation process would impede a hearing on the CDP. It wasn't until the summer of 2016 that Commission staff formally asked Poseidon to withdraw its application and hold off Commission processing until after the Regional Board amended the NPDES permit and made its Ocean Plan Amendment consistency determination. Poseidon withdrew the CDP application in September, but only after the Commission, the State Lands Commission, and the Regional Board agreed upon the order and sequence for agency action in the Interagency Permit Sequence Framework Agreement. I think it's important to note that there really is no legal requirement that requires one agency to act before another, and so this framework was requested to establish a voluntary procedural order to sort this out amongst the agencies. The Commission will now be the last agency to act and not the first. Poseidon and Commission staff also signed a Memorandum of Understanding in October, under which Poseidon agreed to withdraw its CDP application with the understanding that it would be resubmitted soon after that withdrawal. And that brings us to today. As indicated in the staff report, Commission staff prepared a draft staff report in anticipation of the September 2016 hearing. And we really don't anticipate major modifications to the project requiring substantial work to rewrite that staff report. And in fact, one of staff's stated preference for having the regional board go first was to limit the expenditure of staff time and resources. So as agreed to in the MOU, we are planning to resubmit our application in the coming months. And given the lengthy history of the project, staff's request to withdraw our applications, and our continued willingness to work together and to fund additional studies, we are respectfully requesting a fee waiver when the application is submitted. I'd like to just, in closing, mention the Banning Ranch situation. I think that Allison said that this is not analogous. It was cited really in our letter to demonstrate that there has been precedent for the Commission recently to act on a fee waiver request. So I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And Stan Williams.
Good morning, Commissioner. Stan Williams with Poseidon Water. And I had the great opportunity to work with staff on this multi-year independent process that we went through. Spent a lot of time with Tom and Allison, and I have to say they're as good a staff as I've ever worked with in the public sector. However, there is a part of the process that we went through. When we got close to the end of the independent process, it became clear that staff was not pleased with the outcome. And the way we found that out was essentially we could not get a staff response to the second and final report of the ISTAP, which found that there were no feasible subsurface intakes. We actually met with staff. There's different versions of how that went, but the actual occurrence of that meeting has been captured in an independent document prepared by the facilitator of the process in an article called Desalination in California, the California Coastal Commission, Poseidon Water Joint Fact-finding process. And in that document, what he is quoted is, near the close of the process, that's the phase two of ISTAP, well before the phase two draft report was issued, Poseidon requested a meeting with senior commission permitting staff to contemplate actions in the post-report release phase. At that meeting, senior commission staff indicated that due to the need to avoid prejudicing their permit review, their response to the ISTAP report will be provided as part of the overall staff recommendation to the Commission regarding Poseidon's permit application. In response, Poseidon then submitted a permit application for a desalination facility. In other words, we could not get a commitment from staff on how they were going to interpret and recommend based upon the independent panel without getting into the CDP process. That was the reason we went forward. And going on in this article, it says, according to Tom Luster, the commission staff was surprised when Poseidon submitted shortly after the publication of the draft phase two report and before we had jointly discussed whether we would be moving on to a possible phase three of alternative sites. So that part of the history is a little different in our view. It's more like in line with this. We never were requested to fund and go forward with the phase three alternative site analysis, because to do that, there had to be an acceptance of the fact that there are no feasible subsurface intakes at our site, and staff would not go that far. So we never got to phase three. We were not asked to fund phase three, and we submitted in order to find out what is the result of this two-year multi-million dollar process we've been through, because we could not get a response from staff. So I think throughout this process, we went back to that 2013 meeting, and as Allison identified, there was a lot of information you didn't have to make decisions. And our purpose through this whole process has been to get you that information and get it in front of you as the decision makers. And we've tried to do that in a cooperative effort. I think it's amazing we were able to negotiate an interagency agreement between three state agencies on a permitting process. When they couldn't do it themselves. So I think what we've went out of this meeting today, as much as anything else, is for you to recognize that we have tried to really work with the process to make the process clear not only for us, but for other applicants that come after us in this process, since we were really pioneering the new desal amendment process. Thank you for your time this morning, and it's been good to, like I said, work with the staff, and I hope we continue as we come back later on.
Thanks. Very much. Susan Jordan, you have one party conceding time to you, so you'll have 6 minutes.
Thank you, and let me just get myself organized here.
All right.
Where
well,
the clicker
we have
is.
Clock issues as well.
Okay.
How are we doing?
Billy, where's the clicker thing? Well, I'm not really very good at that part of it. Ah, because it's not up here.
Three.
No, six. And then so it switches.
Okay.
I should have let me just get myself together.
You do a timer. Okay, sorry, you'll have 6 minutes.
Thank you. Okay, so everything's on. All right, so it only says 3 minutes, but you're going to fix that, right? Okay, so I'm going to take a little bit different approach here, and I'm going to probably read most of this because it is very technical, but I want to give you a slightly different perspective. Poseidon has been pressuring all the agencies to rush their review of its project in Huntington Beach, but they haven't lined up a willing seller, a buyer for its water. Several water districts, including the Irvine Ranch Water District, have expressed really some significant concerns about the Poseidon proposal. They're concerned about this new idea of injecting it, the desal water, into the groundwater aquifer. This is all documented, and it's one of the reasons that there are going to be additional CEQA. The delays were not caused by staff. They were caused by the applicant. Once the State Water Board approved the Ocean Plan Amendment that sets these standards, Poseidon refused to adjust its permitting path to allow the regional board to go first. But it has primary jurisdiction over the project, including the evaluation of the need for the facility, the location, the size, the intake design, etc. Instead, they pressured your staff to deem their application complete, even though staff advised them that this was not a good path. Once the staff deemed the project complete, based on Poseidon's insistence, as Allison told you, the Permit Streamlining Act kicked in. But that meant that you were going to be required to go before the regional board did. So staff went ahead, set your hearing for September 2016. And then Poseidon asked for a postponement on August 19th, 2016, after doing all this work, after everybody in the public did all the work. And I know what date that was, because that was my 65th birthday. Okay, Poseidon's demand in exchange for withdrawal of its application. So the MOU that you got was, and Poseidon did not withdraw until October, and until that MOU was signed, and they insisted that the three agencies sign this permit sequencing MOU. The minute that MOU was signed, they put out a press release and had stories running that talked about it as a permit streamlining MOU. There's a big difference in our world, in our legal world, of a permit sequencing MOU and a permit streamlining MOU, which implies that the agencies themselves are giving up their legal jurisdiction and giving this applicant special treatment. I don't want any more special treatment here. We believe this is going to be a significantly changed project when it comes back to you. I have actually seen what the Regional Water Quality Control Board has asked this applicant for. They don't feel that the ISTAP process was complete. They feel there needs to be additional work there on subsurface. And we knew that was going to happen all along, but this is really Poseidon trying to jam you into going first to give this impression that the project is whole. The Regional Water Board Quality Control Board needs to go first. And in my feeling, there's no reason to grant them this fee waiver. So who's Poseidon? I really think this is important. This is Scott Maloney's slide from a Ventura Forum I attended in December. And as you see, they are now majority owned by Brookfield Asset Management. Let's talk about that a little bit. Who is Brookfield? Well, from the prior slide, global presence, 110-year history, $250 billion with a B of assets under management. They say they are one of the world's largest investors, owners, and operators of infrastructure assets. And a news article quoted them as being ruthless in extracting infrastructure profits. That was in Australia. Let's look at Poseidon's lobbying expenditures since 2001 to 2002 legislative sessions. It comes to about $1.38 million. And I went through all those documents. And of the $351,000 that Poseidon spent in the 2009-2010 legislative session, $192,000 of that was spent on a bill called AB 1570, which was a gut and amend, and that would have overridden the commission's jurisdiction and automatically extended their Carlsbad permit if they failed to begin construction on time. The bill ultimately failed, but nonetheless, that's a significant chunk of change. Their political donations, it's almost impossible to track all their donations, but between the OC Register and the Los Angeles Times, we're talking well over, you know, 300,000 plus. The things that are not reported that we can track are the attorneys, the public affairs and communications people they're using, the experts they've hired, the consultants that are out creating organizations in Orange County, and any lobbying that goes on here. In fact, we won't know exactly what was spent on all the people coming here today. I feel that Poseidon has more than ample financial resources at its disposal. Staff has already expended significant staff time and resources on their project. And based on what I've seen come out of the regional board so far and the fact that additional CEQA is being done by the State Lands Commission and the Orange County Water District now has to do additional CEQA because now they're talking about putting the water in the aquifer. I mean, this is not going to be the same project. And I do think your staff is going to have to do considerable additional work. I don't believe with a company with these kinds of resources that has jammed these agencies and your staff this way, not to mention all the unsavory stories they're planting in the media like on a monthly basis, I just don't believe you should subsidize Poseidon's application, especially in view of what you just paid for your non-audit audit. I just don't believe there's any reason to do that, and I urge you not to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Jennifer Savage.
Hi, Jennifer Savage, Surfrider Foundation. We are here speaking in support of staff's recommendation to deny the fee waiver. The reasons are clearly laid out. Poseidon has submitted an incomplete application. They refuse to follow staff's advice. They've already taken inordinate amount of staff time as a result and will continue to impose additional work on staff. As has been noted, Poseidon's behavior has created an extraordinary burden. Multiple meetings have had to be prepared for. This could have easily been avoided by more careful planning as well as by adherence to the laws regulating seawater desalination, including the Coastal Act. In fact, for over a decade, the public has been recommending a rational process for approval of an adequate EIR and a rational sequence of permit approvals. Poseidon has failed to listen to reason. They failed to take that rational approach. Instead, they routinely blame state agencies and the public for the delays that they themselves have created. Their insistence on requesting approvals in a self-serving manner has caused an enormous waste of time and resources by state agencies and by the public. Perhaps this is willful ignorance, or perhaps they are just bad at what they do, but we don't know. But what we do know, and any parent of a toddler or teenager can tell you, that you don't reward poor behavior. To reiterate, a history of incompetence and false narrative that has done little but burden the public should not be resulting in unjustified and unnecessary waiver of fees. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Ray.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, I'm Steve Ray. I'm here because my history with Poseidon goes back a long ways. Matter of fact, back to 2002. So for over the last 14 years, I have had a great interest in this. And I first became aware when a friend of mine called me one day and said I'd become a new commissioner, planning commissioner in Huntington Beach. And a friend of mine called and said, I'm a consultant for Poseidon Resources, who's going to build a desal plant, and we want to take you on a tour. So I went on their tour. It sounded like a great project to me at that time, I will say, and it sounded favorable. I was seemingly favorable to it until we got into the weeds, as it were, with the project. And as I began reading through the 4.5 feet of EIR and related documents on the project, I became aware that there were significant environmental impacts and, indeed, some misrepresentation of facts, which became apparent to us through the process. Matter of fact, we kept having to redo much of the work simply because the management of Poseidon were being very disingenuous and dishonest with us about what was going on with the project. And we became aware of other facts and presented those, and at first they denied, and then eventually they admitted, that's correct. We were not correct in the first instance with you. So I've always been very, very cautious of anything I hear from Poseidon since then. Now, I will admit that was under different management and different ownership at the time. I'm saddened from what I'm hearing today that it may appear that some of those practices have either been retained through the years or have been renewed again. And regarding the fee waiver, I want to say that my experience with your staff, and we have much experience with your staff, is that your staff really, really, goes the extra mile to be fair, to be communicative with applicants and everybody else in the process. And as part of that, it's painfully aware here, painfully for the applicant at least, that the staff gave them fair warning of what they needed to do to not make the application complete and not subject themselves yet to another fee that they would have to pay. Poseidon decided, as they always have, that they don't have to listen to anybody and decided not to do that, not to take that advice. It's fair now that they were aware of the consequences. They are now subject to them. So we support the denial of the fee waiver. Thank you very much.
I'm very sorry about this.
Nothing.
There we go.
Working.
Okay. We have some big glitches. I apologize for the clock, too. It keeps beeping and making noises during people's speaking time. Okay, I don't have any other speaker cards, so I'll bring it back to staff.
Thank you. Just real briefly, I'd like to step back a little bit to January of 2016, which is when the Office of Administrative Law approved the desal amendment. The landscape significantly changed at that time with that amendment becoming law. We very quickly at that time began talking with both state and regional board staff about their new process, and we learned pretty quickly about what we thought that process was going to be about for them and the kinds of information, you know, that we knew that they were going to want, which included that phase three review. And so we had, you know, really developed a good working relationship with Poseidon at that point, and so I did make that phone call in March of 2016 in good faith, suggesting to them that they might really want to consider, you know, just keeping the pending application incomplete. Let's give this some time. Let's see how this works out so that we didn't end up having to be here today. And they chose to file that application complete anyway and to start the clock. And we know that moving forward that we're going to have very time-consuming staff work. And so that just concludes my remarks for now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So bring it to the commission. Commissioner Challenberger.
We're on. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the commission direct the executive director to waive the permit application fee for the upcoming submittal of Poseidon's Coastal Development Permit application pursuant to the staff recommendation and recommend a no vote.
Second.
All right. Would you like to speak to your motion?
I would. I think this hearing has been, much of the testimony is makes it unduly complicated. This is actually a pretty simple issue. The commission did not ask the Poseidon to withdraw. We have all known the commission has been briefed. The importance of this water board new policy, and we knew it was coming. Poseidon knew it was coming. Until it was actually approved, we couldn't take action on it. Poseidon's the one that wanted to that started the clock running. We didn't start the clock running, so it's simple to me. And I want to address the Banning Ranch because I opposed it then, and I think the waiver. And I think history shows that those who voted no on that waiver were right. It took staff an extraordinary amount of time to come up with a new staff report on the. The time was because it needed to be a seriously amended development. The same is happening with Poseidon. The idea that isn't going to take staff much work to put together a new staff report is somebody who doesn't begin to understand staff workload. This is going to be, by the time the Water Board finally approves it, it's going to be have significant changes from anything that's been before us. It's going to take a lot of staff work. I don't think that our fee is high enough, but it's not a sliding fee. We have to go with what our regulations are. So this is a simple one for me. A lot of the stuff that's been thrown out there is really not relevant to whether or not when you submit an application, you need to pay the filing fee. The fact you've had applications before that for very, very good reasons did not come before this commission for a vote is of Poseidon's doing. So I urge my fellow commissioners not to grant this request. I think it is unfounded.
Thank you. Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. Well, while we come to the same conclusion, I have a somewhat different perspective than Commissioner Schellenberger. I do believe that it's not warranted to provide relief on the fees. This is a very technologically complex issue. It's going to take a substantial amount of time. If there's three state agencies involved, that alone is a challenging project to coordinate. In addition, there will be a substantial amount of public interest in this that will take time for our staff to be responding to in appropriate ways. And then, of course, there's the applicant themselves who will want to work very closely with. Where I take exception is, you know, this characterization that they've tried to jam the project and, you know, the character assassination that the public spoke to. The reality of it is, in my view, this has been a confused process. We didn't get it right. We asked them to come in. Then we recognized, working with the state board, that it ought to be changed. I think it is important to create a process that all state agencies work in a coordinated way. So to try and lay all of the challenge of this at the feet of the applicant, I think, is inappropriate. Having said that, I think it is also not warranted that we not recognize that there will be a substantial amount of additional time involved in this application, and for that reason, I won't be supporting the waiver.
Commissioner Cox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have just a couple of procedural questions, which maybe I could address to our council. And I know in the county of San Diego, when we have development projects, the way that we deal with it is we give an estimate of what we think the cost of processing is going to be to the applicant, and then they post a deposit, and then we work against that based upon time and material for the staff as they review it. You know, in my experience on the Coastal Commission, which is obviously not as long as most of the members on the commission, but I mean, it seems like we have some of the most Byzantine processes and ways of dealing with issues. And I'm just kind of wondering, are we precluded by state law, by legislative action, from taking a different approach? I mean, it seems to me that the fees that are charged here, $283,250 for projects over $100 million. Well, that seems like a pretty reasonable starting point. But you know, probably a $100 million hotel project is going to be a lot different than a $900 million desal plant. So I'm just trying to get an understanding of you know, what constraints do we have, and are there other ways to try to deal with this, obviously not in this project, but in the future?
Through the chair, Commissioner Cox, the commission's regulations specify the applications fees that the commission may charge. You know, the basic framework of those regulations has been in place for a few decades now. The commission has periodically adjusted the amounts, and we currently have an inflation factor built into that. So under our current regulations, the commission is bound by the fees that are specified in those regulations.
I guess my question is, who sets those regulations?
The commission sets those regulations. So the statute, the Coastal Act, does authorize the commission to charge application fees and to require reimbursements of expenses. So the commission does have the authority to decide to amend those regulations if it chooses to do so, but until it amends those regulations, the current regulations are what govern.
I understand that we're dealing with something we can't change the rules at this point in the process, but it seems to me that I think most governmental agencies in California at the city and county level probably take a similar approach. I mean, obviously, we just went through a discussion on the non-audit audit. And, you know, dealing with the fact that we do have cash flow issues that we're trying to deal with. And it seems to me that I have no question in my mind that the amount of staff time that's been put in over the last, well, now going on 11 years since Poseidon first submitted their original application, that, you know, the $283,250 that was paid way back when has probably been consumed many times over. And, you know, I don't think we should make a decision today based upon the wealth or the financial viability of the company that's applying, but it just seems like there's some issues that maybe subsequent to this we should have some discussions about whether this is really the right way to deal with the processing of applications, particularly given the tight budget issues we have to deal with. The other question I have is that in deeming an application complete, we have a situation where in May of 2015 that the State Water Quality Board determined that state and regulatory boards have primary authority to determine whether proposed facilities meet that standard in regards to approving a desal operation. That particular action didn't go into effect, as I understand it, until January of 2016, when that amendment went into effect. So why wouldn't that have been something that was added to the list of conditions before an application was deemed complete, so that when they came in March and basically or early April and basically said, okay, we're ready to go, why didn't we have the ability to go through the checklist and say, oh, well, there's been some changes in processing under state actions, and we can't deem your application complete until the Regional Water Quality Control Board makes their determination?
Under the Permit Streamlining Act, well, stepping back, my understanding is that Poseidon had submitted its application prior to when the desal policy had gone into effect. So staff, under the Permit Streamlining Act, was required to evaluate that application and within 30 days make a determination of whether or not that application was complete. When staff determines that an application is not complete, the Permit Streamlining Act requires staff to send a letter to the applicant identifying what information is missing and to specify, and the statute requires a thorough description of the specific information needed to complete the application. So staff sent out that incomplete letter prior to when the desalination policy was prior to when it was final.
When did that letter go out?
I believe that was the fall of 2015. Allison can.
So even though we knew that the state water quality board had taken that action, we knew it wasn't going to go in effect until January, we couldn't require that as a condition?
So the Permit Streamlining Act requires the commission to send out an incomplete letter within 30 days of when the application is received. So that's a deadline that applies, and the statute also provides that if that letter isn't sent out within 30 days, then the application is deemed complete. And the statute specifies that once an application is complete, no additional information can be required, the deadlines are triggered. So staff had provided this incomplete letter. They had specified the information that was necessary to make the application complete. Then after the desalination policy had become final, my understanding is Poseidon then opted to submit, all of the information that had been identified in that letter, despite staff's recommendation that they hold off to allow the process to play out. So once we had received all of the information that had been specified in the incomplete letter, we felt it was necessary at that time to deem the application as complete, and then the statutory deadlines were triggered.
Well, I don't know. I guess I go back to my original comment. I think sometimes we operate as a commission under some of the most bizarre and arcane rules that I've seen in governmental agencies. But I think the motion on the floor is the right motion. I think Poseidon, I think, has been working in a cooperative vein with our staff. But I got to believe that the costs of analysis and the changes that will come about ultimately by whatever action the Regional Water Quality Control Board takes will justify the fact that there's going to be additional review. But I think this was a fair issue for them to bring forward, and I'm going to support the motion that's on the floor.
Thank you. All right. Just to conclude, Commissioner McClure.
Yeah, I just want to weigh in that I don't have a problem waiving the fees at all, because it's been this 11-year process that we're trying to get through. And I think that we have stubbed our toes several times, and so has the applicant. And it has been complete, utter chaos with the three different agencies and everybody coming together. So it's kind of a perfect storm, to keep going. And I can understand the applicant's apprehension, because possibly feels like, oh, good, we're going to pay again and have the same report requesting denial because there wasn't a phase three. And I understand that interpretation, but I also understand our costs, but I'm also kind of miffed because there were several commissioners just the other day that weren't really thinking that we should take some of the enforcement dollars to pay for staff, but we can have this kind of, spiraling cost. And I can see by the number of people at the dais that it's going to, that we are probably going to end up asking Poseidon to pay. But I would really like the staff to be able to come back with a proposal of what Commissioner Cox talked about, that it might need to be more in line with the actual cost and the analysis and that kind of thing of getting the money, because possibly this isn't enough money to cover. But that needs to be done relatively quickly, as far as I'm concerned, because this is kind of, it's so frustrating because I don't know who to believe. I don't know, why we didn't, if we knew there was a regulation coming that was going to be in effect in January and we send a letter in September, but we don't include that requirement because it's not officially the law yet, or I don't even know why we didn't include that requirement with the water board, but we didn't, and so the application came back. I also find it disturbing that we can ask applicants to hold their applications because of being complete or not complete, because that's one of the issues of how long things take for people and how that process works, because I know there's language in the Coastal Act that talks about the staff can't interfere with projects. How can the staff ask for a project to be delayed and not be completed, to do that? It's just questionable that we have a project that I think is going to be quite contentious, and I think there's lots of people who are in favor and not in favor. There's information, there's misinformation. In fact, I read an article that the scientists from Scripps had questioned one of our staff members on how they had interpreted their scientific evidence. And I don't know if staff can comment on that or not. And I know it's not exactly tied to this, but it's tied to Poseidon. And it's so where, someone from the public will come in and say, well, the LA Times said X, Y, and Z, that this is how much money they spent. Yet here we have an article that talks about that we have actually taken scientific information and twisted the scientific information.
Commissioner McClure,
I'm going to finish.
I'm sure you are. I just want to say I don't see how this is at all relevant to this waiver, and I really feel that this is something that perhaps you could talk to staff off.
No, it's based on the fact that both sides say the other side's lying.
Well, people say things, but this is not about that.
Never mind.
Thank you. All right. There is a tendency by some of us to assume that if somebody says something negative about staff, that it's true. And I don't share that. I don't believe that this is the forum for us to talk about rumor and innuendo and press. We know ourselves how the press has treated us. Are we going to do that to our staff?
That's not what I was doing.
Well, it sounded like it.
I was listening
very carefully.
That's not
all right. Well, we can have this discussion later. I think I'm going to reserve saying anything. I have a lot of disagreement with a number of things that are said here, including Mr. Williams, God bless you. I do remember why we couldn't consider the state policy at that point, because it was not adopted. But we all knew it was coming, and there were a number of us on the dais when we had the hearing saying, wouldn't you rather wait to Poseidon, and they decided they didn't want to wait at that time. So let's just be clear. We're here to decide if this waiver is appropriate. So please, let's have a vote. I think the makers of the motion are asking for a no vote. Take a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Cox?
No.
Cox, no. Commissioner Groom?
No.
Groom, no. Commissioner Howell?
No.
Howell, no. Commissioner Kinsey?
No.
Kinsey, no. Commissioner McClure?
No.
McClure, no. Commissioner Schellenberger?
No.
Schellenberger, no. Commissioner Turnbull Sanders?
No.
Turnbull Sanders, no. Commissioner Vargas?
No.
Vargas, no. Chair Bochco?
No.
Bochco, no. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you. Okay, what do we have next? Or do we need a break? What time is it? Let's take a small break. 10 minutes. I got to see which finger is up. I know what finger I got up.
Ready?
Oh, there we are ready. Okay, everyone, please, let's get back to business. I know I tend to go 10 minutes goes into an hour. Okay, where are we now? Consent calendar? Yeah, item 8. Okay, go right ahead, please.
Thanks, Billy. So that takes us to the energy consent calendar and item 8. As Carl reported earlier, we moved item 9A, the application by the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, to the consent calendar. The applicant is in support of the staff recommendation. We've received no objections, and therefore we recommend the commission approve the consent calendar today.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
We approve the consent calendar.
And there are no action items today for the North Coast, and so that concludes my items today.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. That takes us to item 13, which is the Deputy Director's Report for the South Coast District, Orange County. There are 10 waivers being reported for routine residential projects and one waiver for expansion of a parking lot at State Parks Orange Coast District offices in San Clemente. There have been no public comments on any of the waivers. Therefore, staff recommends commission concur with the executive director's determination and approve all the items on the deputy director's report.
Okay. Does anyone have any objection to any of the items? Okay, do we have unanimous concurrence? Seeing that we do, we concur with the deputy director's report.
All right, and we don't have any items for number 14, so that takes us to 15A. So item 15A represents the completion of the process for the certification of the Newport Beach implementation plan, which will result in a new, fully certified local coastal program for the city of Newport Beach for the area that is covered by their plan. The commission approved the IP with suggested mods in September 2016 and approved findings in support of that certification at the commission's December 2016 meeting. Because there were suggested mods adopted by the commission, the regulations require that these revisions be accepted by the local government and that the local government's action doing so be reported back to the commission. The city has completed that step. So although perhaps not apparent from the small size of the report in your packet today, this does represent a major milestone for the city and its residents and the commission in the management of coastal resources in Newport Beach. It is the step by which this commission returns local control over much development permitting to the local government, which is a major theme of the Coastal Act. Going forward, many of the projects routinely reviewed by this commission on a monthly basis can now be processed by the city instead of by the commission. Of course, this commission will remain involved in cases of appeal and where a project remains in the commission's area of original jurisdiction and when the city revises and updates its plan. There are some remaining steps ahead with the commission that will be on your agenda in the coming months, including review of the post-cert map that will help identify the areas where locally processed permits may be appealed to the commission and the areas where the commission retains permit jurisdiction. However, the city is targeting January 30th, 2017 is the date on which it would begin processing applications for coastal permits. So we would not have been here without the tireless help of many commission and city staff and their consultants that have labored on this effort, along with the citizens and locally elected representatives who have served on the advisory boards, planning commission, and city council that ultimately brought this plan to us. To all that were involved, we would like to express our genuine gratitude for their service. On our staff, I want to recognize the efforts of the lead analysts that worked on this, who were Liliana Roman and Aaron Prehler, and our former deputy director, Sherilyn Sarb, as well as our legal and technical staff that were so important to this effort. I also want to recognize the Patrick Alford, Brenda Wisniewski, and Kim Brandt, who worked so closely with us at the city. So with that, I'll note that the city has adopted the commission's revisions, and staff recommends the commission concur with the executive director's determination that the action is legally adequate and that this implementation plan may become effectively certified.
All right, thank you. Are there any ex partes on this matter? I do have one speaker card, Steve Ray. Can you do this in 2 minutes?
I'll be as quick as I can.
All right.
Okay, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Steve Ray with the Banning Ranch Conservancy. First of all, I want to congratulate staff's work on the this implementation plan. We have been urging the city of Newport Beach for a long, long, long time to complete work on this. I will say that we have done so with a certain degree of concern and caution, that being that the City Council of Newport Beach has a history of ignoring its own general plan and zoning laws and CEQA and the Coastal Act, so we're concerned about how well they're going to live up to their obligations under the LCP that they will now be administering. So we will be hawkish in watching their activities there. But we do support this implementation plan and the executive director's concurrence on it. There is one other issue that's kind of relative to it, and that is that we have heard from people inside the city that they intend to use this LCP as also to kind of basically transfer it over to Banning Ranch should they get a project on Banning Ranch and incorporate that into the city, annex it in. And I would raise the caution both for staff and the city that, in our opinion, that is inappropriate because Banning Ranch has many issues that are separate and inconsistent with the provisions in the implementation plan. So we'll see how all that works out in the future. But for this, we do congratulate staff, and we congratulate the city for concurring with all of the recommendations that the commission approved. We're just going to be monitoring and make sure they actually live by it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So staff is asking for unanimous concurrence, determining that the city's actions are legally adequate. Do I have unanimous concurrence? Seeing that I do, we concur. Okay. City of San Clemente next.
All right. That takes us to item 15B, which is a request to extend the time limit for commission action on City of San Clemente's Land Use Plan Amendment 1-16. This is a LUP amendment to comprehensively update the city's plan as one of several steps toward their certification. Pursuant to the commission's regulations, commission must act on the amendment within 90 days of the submittal unless the time deadline is waived by the commission. Staff needs additional time to work with the city on modifications to the submittal and therefore is requesting the commission approve a time extension not to exceed 1 year. The city is aware of and supports the request. Staff is targeting the spring or summer to bring a recommendation to the commission. So the motion to approve the time extension is on the front page of the one-page staff report.
All right. I have no speakers. Do I have a motion? Do we have unanimous buzzing? Do we have unanimous concurrence on the time extension? Seeing that we do.
All right, that takes us to item 16, which is the Deputy Director's report for the San Diego Coast District. There are three waivers being reported for routine residential projects and one emergency permit that was issued for the temporary placement of 54-ton rocks in front of an existing failing seawall that protects a single-family residence along the oceanfront in Del Mar. The foundation of that home was threatened by wave action and high tides, and the rocks are just a temporary measure and are to be removed later this year, at which point a plan to address the existing vertical wall should be underway. We're confident that existing rock will be removed as planned, as the city required the applicant to establish a bond for that removal. There have been no public comments on any of the waivers or the emergency permit. Therefore, staff recommends the commission concur with the ED's determination and approve all items on the deputy director's report.
Do I have unanimous concurrence? Yes, I do. So we concur.
Thank you. Item 17 is for the applications moved from regular calendar to the consent calendar for the San Diego Coast District. Staff's recommending the commission move items 20A, 20B, and 20C. I do want to note that on 20A, there is a change in your addendum to Special Condition 1 to clarify which segments of that existing pipeline for the San Alijo Joint Power Authority project require backfilling to protect structures located above it. This change was made at the request of the applicant. They're in agreement. Conditions are acceptable to the applicant. There's no known objections from the public, and staff recommends these three items be moved to the consent calendar.
All right. Do I have a motion? All right. Do I have unanimous concurrence on the consent calendar? Yes, I do. We'll go on.
That takes us to item 18A, which is the City of Oceanside LCP Amendment 61642-1, and consists of revisions to the City of Oceanside's implementation plan only. This is the second submittal for the city that will be a series of LCP amendments the commission will hear from the City of Oceanside in the near future as part of an effort to streamline and update the city's IP. The city is currently operating under two different zoning ordinances, one from 1986 was certified by the commission and applies to properties in the coastal zone. The second from 92 is used for properties located outside the coastal zone. The city's found that having these two separate ordinances creates problems because the two documents contain differing definitions and or development standards that are applied to different parts of the city. Thus, the city has been working to merge the two documents with the goal of having a single updated and comprehensive ordinance for the entire city. The amendment before you today largely contains administrative rather than substantive changes. These administrative changes are being processed first. Once complete, the city will begin a comprehensive update. The comprehensive update will focus on more substantive updates to the code and will include a thorough public outreach component. In addition, the city recently received an LCP grant from the commission to include sea level rise as a component of that comprehensive update. The initial merger of the ordinances largely involved identifying components that are either out of date, are no longer applicable, or were never implemented. Thus, the majority of the proposed amendment is to repeal these parts. Commission staff has reviewed the zones proposed for repeal and determined that all of those proposed can be supported. During our review, staff identified a few cases where the repeal could have raised concerns, such as with removal of the dairy agricultural zone and the scenic park zone. These are just a couple examples. These zones promote land uses that are supported or protected by the LCP and the Coastal Act. However, through cooperative work with the city, staff's concerns with those changes were addressed. Um, So, for instance, we were able to determine that there's no land within the coastal zone that would be suitable for the dairy agricultural zone because the city's coastal zone is small, completely built out, and contains no prime agriculture. In addition, should in the future an opportunity arise that would allow this type of ag use in the coastal zone, there are a number of other zones, such as the lower density residential zone, that would facilitate that use. Similarly, the city's scenic park zone, which limits development on lands adjacent to parks, has never been applied to any land within the city's coastal zone. The city has instead used a different mechanism, the scenic park overlay, to implement and protect park areas from adjacent overdevelopment. And since this overlay is not part of the IP, the city is including certification of that overlay as a component of this amendment. So the new article contains the same objectives and development standards as the scenic park zone, but can be applied on a more general basis. Therefore, the removal of that zone can be found consistent with and adequate to carry out the land use plan policies as proposed. There are a total of five articles from the 92 ordinance that are being brought into the IP that either replace administrative articles or are administrative and include description of procedural changes only. These aren't substantive, and staff has concluded these don't raise land use plan consistency concerns. So staff is recommending the commission approve the amendment as submitted by the city. While the request includes a significant number of revisions to the plan, through cooperative work with the city, we were able to address any inconsistencies. So the appropriate motion for this item begins on page 5 of the staff report. That concludes staff's comments.
All right. Do I have any ex partes on this? Seeing none, do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I'd move that the commission reject the implementation program amendment for the City of Oceanside LCPA number LCP-6-OCN-16-0042 as submitted, and I would ask for a no vote.
Second. Would you like to speak to your motion?
No.
To your second? All right. Do I have any objection to a unanimous no vote? Seeing none, the implementation plan is implemented.
Thanks very much.
Is there another? Is there another motion?
No, there shouldn't be.
I don't see it. Where is it?
No.
Just one. Okay, great. Yeah. Thanks.
So item 18B is postponed, so that takes us to item 18C. This is a request to extend the time limit for commission action on the City of San Diego's implementation plan amendments, parts A and B, of LCP Amendment 1663-2 and LCP 1664-2. These amendments address affordable housing, emergency shelters, and retirement communities, and amend the certified downtown community plan to incorporate these changes to the mobility plan. Pursuant to the Commission's regs, the Commission must act on the amendments within 90 days of filing, unless the time is waived. So staff is recommending the additional time to work on those modifications. The City is aware of and has not objected to this request, and so staff is planning to bring the recommendation to the Commission on these matters back to the Commission in the next few months. So motion to approve the time extensions on the front page of the one-page staff.
All right. Do I have any ex partes on this?
Madam Chair, I would move that the Commission extend the 90-day time limit to act on the City of San Diego's LCP amendment numbers LCP-6-SAN-16-0063-2 Part A, LCP-6-SAN-16-0063-2 Part B, and LCP-6-CCP-16-0064-2 for 1 year, and I would ask for a yes vote.
Would you like to speak to your motion? To your second? Any objection to unanimous yes vote? Seeing no objection, passes.
All right, thank you. That takes us to item 19D, which is a new appeal filed by the commission and local interested parties of a permit granted to the City of Coronado for the construction of a new public restroom with plaza and beach stairway that would be protected by a new steel sheet pile seawall on Avenida del Sol. The restroom would be located at a street end that currently offers coastal views that would be impacted by the new structure and is sited in a hazardous location that requires new shoreline armoring. Staff believes there are alternatives that need to be considered and has concluded that the appeals raise a number of issues as to consistency with the certified local coastal program and the public access and recreation policies of the Coastal Act. There's no addendum on the item, but I do want to note that we received a letter from one of the appellants, Mr. Whittington, after our deadline for distribution, which you may have received directly from him and is part of the record. The letter doesn't contain any new information, but does note that the appellant continues to dispute that the city owns the land on which the proposed restroom would be built, but doesn't offer any new evidence to substantiate that their dispute. So you can find staff's response on the issue on pages 15 to 16 of the staff report, which explains the city has provided a subdivision map that shows the area being dedicated to the city. So staff is recommending that the commission determine that a substantial issue exists with respect to the grounds on which the appeals have been filed. And unless three or more commissioners want to hold a hearing on that question, substantial issue will be found and this matter will return for a de novo hearing on the merits at a later date.
All right. Do three or more commissioners want to have a hearing on substantial issue? So we found substantial issue, and we'll have a hearing later.
All right, thank you. And I think that concludes our San Diego Coast items.
All right. Do we have anything else on the calendar here? Okay. So we're finished with this part of the public hearing. We'll go into closed session on item 21. Or Susan, do you have anything you want to say? All right. And then we will come back to report out of closed session, and that would be the last item of our day. Thank you. I'm ready. Yes, we're reporting out of closed session. The commission met in closed session today to discuss applicants for the executive director position and the interview process. The commission decided which applicants to invite for interviews in closed session at the commission's February meeting. And that's a wrap.